like a glorious day. This is the 23rd of June. The year is 2004. This is Peter. I call myself a poet. And today, I'd like to spend some time with a dead poet. Not long dead, but one almost has to wait until some respectable time after death to go back and look at the work of the people. Today, we're going to spend some time with a person I consider a great poet. Some consider him a ribaldist. And I think he's a great anti-war poet of the last century, one of the great anti-war poets of the last century. He clearly had direct experience of World War I. He lost his brother in it. And he may very well have been a Red Cross stretcher bearer. At least, it certainly sounds like it from some of the poems he wrote. He, as you know, is anthologized, and he's known for three poems. He's known for the shooting of dangerous Dan McGrew. He's known for the cremation of Sam McGee. And he's known for the ballad of Casey at the Bat, or something like that. Casey at the Bat. And known for a few other poems, which is a great disservice to a fine poet. And he, I believe, towards the end of his life, resented that fact immeasurably. He considered himself to have been crucified by the anthologists on the poem Dangerous Dan McGrew. And maybe one day I'll read it. But, you know, it after a while, one needs to go back and look at other works of fine poets and just forget about what the anthologizers seem to think is important. Because this man had a lot to say. Robert Service. I don't know a great deal about him. He was, just reading the cover of this jacket, he was born in England in 1874. After spending his childhood in Scotland, came to Canada, began a life of wandering and adventure, giving birth to songs, rhymes, ballads, poems. His vagabond career bounded by Alaska, Turkey, England, and Mexico. Mr. Service, who escaped to America from the German invasion of France, later returned to that country where he spent the remainder of his days. His poetry lives in the vagabond heart. And certainly I've been up to Dawson in the Klondike, and they do make a big deal of Robert Service's cabin in Dawson, up in the Klondike. And in fact, they have these look-alike characters who come in and read his poetry. It so happened that at the time I knew a huge amount of his poetry by heart. And realized that they weren't reading his poems very well. But we weren't allowed to walk down the sidewalk in front of his house when the great people were doing their mimicry of him, because there was a fee-paying audience who were sitting in the front garden listening to somebody acting like Robert Service, doing a terrible job of it, by the way. Anyway, we did walk past a couple of times, but we weren't allowed to listen. Oh dear, that's the trouble. I think even Robert Service would have been offended by that. We were moved on down the sidewalk, down the public sidewalk, so that we couldn't listen to Robert Service's poems because they were being done behind that fence for a fee-paying audience. Anyway, I'm going to read Robert Service today. And in my usual style, I'm going to turn it all upside down and backward. So I start with the very last poem on page 727 of his book, The Collected Poems of Robert Service. L'envoi, l'envoi. Once more, my sheaf of songs I tie, and bid them gleefully goodbye, and feel it will not give me pain to never look on them again. With metronomic measure I have beat them out beneath the sky, and though my facile rhyme I curse, sometimes I think they might be worse. But anyway, as in the past, I vow that they will be my last. For I have come to 65, content to feel so much alive, and though gray-haired, I grieve to state an unrepentant reprobate, admiring lads who wench and whine, but forced, alas, to toe the line. For I have learned a thing or two, as we old coves are bound to do. I've come to know that storing health is better far than storing wealth, that smug success has little worth beside the simple joys of earth, that fame is but a bubble brief, and glory vain beyond belief, that it is good to eat and drink, that it is bad to overthink, that only stupid people claim to take themselves with serious aim, that laughter is the gods' best gift, so to the gods our laughter lift I, through their wrath the heavens split. They grant us scorn to laugh at it. So, frail creatures of a day, let's have a good time while we may, and do the very best we can to give one to our fellow man, knowing that all will end with death. Let's joy with every moment's breath, and lift our heads like blossoms blithe, to meet at last the swinging scythe. And then this one. I'm reading the poems of Robert Service, should you have just joined me. And this one, I read this the same day that group of Vermont National Guardsmen were cheered off to Iraq by an assembled multitude. And I happened to read this poem on that same day. This poem, simple title, Don't Cheer. Don't cheer, damn you. Don't cheer. Silence. Your bitterest tear is fulsomely sweet today. Down on your knees and pray. See, they sing as they go, marching row on row. Who will be spared to return? Somber and starkly stern, chaps whom we knew so strange, distant and dark with change, silent as those they slew, something in them dead too. Who will return this way to sing as they sing today? Send to the glut of guns the bravest and best of sons. Hurl a million to slaughter, blood flowing like river water. Pile up pyramid high your dead to the anguished sky, a monument down all time of hate and horror and crime. Weep, rage, pity, curse, fear, anything, but do not cheer. So to the plowing guns, seed of your splendid sun, let your heroic slain richly manure the plain. What will the harvest be? Unborn of unborn, do you see? Dark is the sky and drear. For pity of God, do not cheer. Dark and dread is their way, who sing as they march today. Humble your hearts and pray. And that is an amazing poem. A poem with a good deal of pathos. It has some wonderful lines. Who will be spared to return, somber and starkly stern, chaps whom we knew so strange, distant and dark with change, silent as those they slew, something in them dead too. Who will return this way to sing as they sing today? That's a pretty powerful set of lines. Here are two lines to me which sum up all war. So to the plowing guns, seed of your splendid sons. Two lines describe war. I'm going backwards. This is a poem from page 723 of the same volume of Robert Service's collected poems. This is called Enemy Conscript. What are we fighting for? We fellows who go to war, fighting for freedom's sake. You give me a bellyache. Freedom to starve or slave. Freedom, I, in the grave. Fighting for hearth and home. Who haven't an inch of loam. Hearth, why, even a buyer could only be ours for hire. Dying for future peace, killing that killing cease. To hell with such tripe, I say, sufficient unto the day. It ain't much fun being dead. Better to lie in bed, cuddle up with the wife, making, not taking life. To the corpse that stinks in clay, does it matter who won the day? What odds if tyrants reign? They can't put irons on the brain. One always can eat one's grub, smoke and drink in a pub. There's happiness in a glass, a pipe, and the kiss of a lass. It's the best we get anyhow in the life we're living now. Who's wanting a hero's fate? To the dead, cheer, to the dead. Cheers come too late. Flesh is softer than steel. Wounds are weary to heal. In the manic hell of the fray, who is there who dares to say hate will be vanquished by love? God's in his heaven above. When those who govern us lead, the lads they command to bleed, when rulers march at the head and statesmen fall with the dead, when kings leap into the fray, fighting in the old-time way, perishing beside their men, maybe, oh, maybe, then war will be part of the past. Peace will triumph at last. Meantime, such lads as I, who wouldn't have harmed a fly, have got to get out and kill. Lads whom we bear no ill, as simple as we, no doubt, who seek what it's all about, who die in defense of what? Homes that they haven't got, who perish when all they ask is to finish the daily task, make bread for the little ones, not feed the greed of the guns. When fields of battle are red, and diplomats die in bed. Well, those are some pretty powerful words. Again, these are the words of Robert Service. When those who govern us lead, the lads they command to bleed, when rulers march at the head, and statesmen fall with the dead, when kings leap into the fray, fight in the old-time way, perish beside their men. Maybe, oh, maybe then war will be part of the past. Peace will triumph at last. I guess we should send the cabinet to lead the troops into battle, and that would solve the problem very rapidly. I'm sure they'd find a way to peace almost instantaneously. Now, I am going to go to a series of poems called The Rhymes of a Red Cross Man. But before I do that, one poem on page 610. Now, one of the wonderful things about coming back to poets recently dead in this case, is that we can concentrate on poems that they are not famous for, but are great poems. And I know I've read quite a few of really excellent Rudyard Kipling poems on this radio, and I know absolutely that it's the first time that they have ever been read in public or on the air, because they're not part of the accepted, you know, the anthologized work, those selected out from the mass to be considered great poems and which mark the poet. Now, this is just one of those. This is a ballad called How MacPherson Held the Floor, and This has some priceless lines. This has some priceless lines. It's a very funny poem. And a few words. This is about a little fisticuffs between the Sassenachs, who are the Saxons, of course, people of Saxon origin, versus the Celts, people of Scottish and Irish origin. And they were all forming this one community way up north in Canada. And they were having a St. Andrew's ball. And this is the story of that. Now, a Sassenach is a Saxon. It's a slightly derogatory term that the Celts use for the Saxons. They call them Sassenachs. And there are a few terms in here in which, well, you'll see. Anyway, it's about the long time animosity and antipathy between the Saxons and the Celts of the British Isles. And this is a fine poem. The Ballad of How Macpherson Held the Floor. Said President McConachie to Treasurer McCall, "We ought to have a piper for our next St. Andrew's ball. Yon squawking saxophone gives me the syncopated gripes. I'm sick of jazz. I want to hear the skirling of the pipes." "Alas, it's true," said Tam McCall. "The young folk of today are foxtrot mad and dinner ken a reel from a Strathspey. Now, what we want's a kilty lad, primed up wi' mountain dew, to strut the floor at supper time and play a lilt or two. In all the north, there's only one. Of him I've heard them speak. His name is Jock Macpherson, and he lives on Boulder Creek. An old-time rock-hard miner, and a wild and wastrel loon, who spends his nights in glory playing pibrochs to the moon. I'll seek him out, beyond a doubt, on the next St. Andrew's ball. We'll proudly hear the pipes to cheer and warm our appetite." Oh, lads was neat and lassies sweet who graced St. Andrew's ball, but there was none so full of fun as Treasurer McCall. And as Maloney's ragtime band struck up the latest hit, he smiled a smile behind his hand and chuckled, "Wait a bit." And so, with many a Celtic snort, with malice in his eye, he watched the merry crowd cavort till supper time drew nigh. Then gleefully he seemed to steal and sought the nugget bar, wherein there sat a tartaned chiel, as lonely as a star, a huge and hairy Highland man, as hearty as a breeze, a glass of whiskey in his hand, his bagpipes on his knee. "Drink down your dock and Doris, Jock," cried Treasurer McCall. "The time is ripe to up and pipe. They wait you in the hall. Gird up your loins and grit your teeth, and here's a pint of hooch to mind you of your native heath. Just put it in your pooch. Play on and on for all you're worth. You'll shame us if you stop. Remember, you're of Scottish birth. Keep piping till you drop." Aye, though a bunch of willy boys could bluster and implore for the glory of the Highland lad, you've got to hold the floor. The dancers were at supper, and the tables groaned with cheer, when President McConachie exclaimed, "What do I hear? Methinks it's like a chanter. It's coming from the hall. It's
Jock McPherson tuning up," cried Treasurer McCall. So up they jumped with shouts of glee, and gaily hurried forth. Said they, "We never thought to see a piper in the north. Aye, all the lads and lassies braw went buzzin' round like bees, and Jock McPherson there they saw, with red and rugged knees. Full 6 feet 4 he strode the floor, a grizzled son of Skye, with glory in his whiskers and whiskey in his eye. With scalp in stride and Scottish pride, he towered above them all. And is he no a bonny sight?" said Treasurer McCall, while President McConachy was fairly daft with glee, and there was jubilation in the Scottish committee. But the dancers seemed uncertain, and they signified their doubt by dashing back to eat as fast as they had darted out. And someone raised the question twixt the coffee and the cakes, "Does the piper walk to get away from all the noise he makes?" Then, reinforced with fancy food, they slowly trickled forth to watch in patronizing mood the piper of the north. Proud, proud was Jock McPherson as he made his bagpipes skirl, and he set his sporran swingin', and he gave his kilts a whirl, and President McConachy was jumpin' like a flea, and there was joy and rapture in the Scottish committee. Just let them have their saxophones with constipated squall. "We're havin' heaven's music now," said Treasurer McCall. But the dancers waxed impatient, and they rather seemed to fret, for Maloney and the jazz of his Hibernian quartet. Yet little recked the piper as he swung his head on high, lamenting with Macrimmon on the heather hills of Skye. With Highland passion in his heart, he held the center floor high. Jock McPherson played like he had never played before. Maloney's Irish medalists were sitting in their place, and as Maloney waited, there was wonder on his face. 'Twas sure the gorgeous music, golly, wouldn't it be grand if he could get McPherson as a member of his band? But the dancers moped and mumbled as around the room they sat. "We paid to dance," they grumbled, "but we cannot dance to that." "Of course, we're not denying that it's really splendid stuff, but it's mighty satisfying. Don't you think we've had enough?" "You've raised a pretty problem," answered Treasurer McCall, "for on St. Andrew's night, you ken, the piper rules the ball." Said President McConachy, "You've said a solemn thing. Tradition holds him sacred. He's got to have his fling. But soon, no doubt, he'll weary out. Have patience, by the wee." "That's right. Respect the piper," said the Scottish committee. And so McPherson stalked the floor, and fast the moments flew, till half an hour had gone past. Irritation grew and grew. Then the dancers held a council, and with faces fiercely set, they hailed Maloney, heading his Hibernian quartet. "It's long I've waited. Come on, Mike. Stand up and play the blues." And Maloney hesitated, but he didn't dare refuse. So banjo and piano, guitar and saxophone, contended with the shrilling of the cantor and the drone. and the women's ears were muffled, so infernal was the din. But MacPherson was unruffled, for he knew that he would win. Then two bright boys jazzed round him, and they sought to play the clown. But MacPherson jolted sideways, and the Sassenach went down. And as if it was a signal, with a wild and angry roar, the gates of wrath were riven. Yet MacPherson held the floor. Aye, amid the rising tumult, still he strode with head on high, with ribbons gaily streaming, yet with battle in his eye. Amid the storm that gathered, still he stalked with Highland pride. While treasurer and president sprang bravely to his side, and with ire and indignation that was glorious to see, around him in a body ringed the Scottish committee. Their eyes were clenched with fury, their eyes with anger blazed. "Ye manna touch the piper," was the slogan that they raised. Then blows were struck, and men went down, yet amid the rising fray, MacPherson towered in triumph, and he never ceased to play. Alas, his faithful followers were but a gallant few, and faced defeat, although they fought with all the skill they knew. For President McConachy was seen to slip and fall, and o'er his prostrate body stumbled Treasurer McCall. And as their foes with triumph roared and leaguered them about, it looked as if their little band would soon be counted out. For eyes were black and noses red, yet on that field of gore, as resolute as Highland rock, MacPherson held the floor. Maloney watched the battle, and his brows were bleakly set, while with him paused and panted his Hibernian quartet. "For sure it is an evil spite, and break into the heart, for an Irishman to watch a fight and not be taken part." Then suddenly on high he soared and tightened up his belt. "And shall we see them crush," he roared, "a brother and a Celt? The fellow artiste needs our aid. Come, boys, and take a hand." And down into the melee dashed Maloney and his band. Now, though it was St. Andrew's Ball, yet men of every race that bow before the great god Jazz were gathered in that place. Yea, those who grunt yah, yah, and those who squeak wee, wee, like Dutch, Dago, Swede, and Finn, Polack, and Portuguese. Yet like ripe grain before the gale, that national hotchpotch went down before the fury of the Irish and the Scotch. Aye, though they closed their gaping ranks and rallied to the fray, to the shamrock and the thistle went the glory of the day. You should have seen the carnage in the drooling light of dawn. Yet amid this scene of slaughter, Jock MacPherson playing on, though all lay low around him, yet he held his head on high, and piped as if he stood upon the caller crags of sky. His face was grim as granite, and no favor did he ask, though weary were his mighty lungs, and empty was his flask, when a fallen foe wailed out, "Say, when will you have done?" MacPherson grinned and answered, "Hoots, she's only half begun." Aye, though his hands were bloody and his knees were gay with gore, a grampian of Highland pride, MacPherson held the floor.
And still, in Yukon valleys where the silent peaks look down, they tell of how the piper was invited up to town, and he went in kilted glory, and he piped before them all. But he wouldn't stop his piping till he busted up the ball of that Homeric scrap they speak, and how the fight went on with sally and with rally till the breaking of the dawn, and how the piper towered like a rock amid the fray, and the battle surged about him, but he never ceased to play. Aye, by the lonely campfire still, they tell the story o'er, how the Sassenachs were vanquished, and MacPherson held the floor. Oh yes, that's the story of how MacPherson held the floor. And it has some priceless lines, these ones in particular. For sure it is an evil spite, and breaking to the heart, for an Irishman to watch a fight, and not be taking part. Wonderful lines, wonderful lines. That is by Robert Service. And so, dear friends, it's about 6:45. This is WGDR in Plainfield, Vermont. And I am reading... I am going to read some rhymes by Robert Service, who really is a great poet. And I'm going to particularly spend time with his anti-war poetry, which starts on 291. Yeah. And these poems are in memory to his brother, Lieutenant Albert Service of the Canadian Infantry, killed in action, France, August 1916. These are great poems, and some of them, I'm afraid, are rather, have a lot of pathos to them, and my voice may break. I apologize beforehand, but you just consider it perhaps, just consider that that's part of the poetry, when the voice breaks with the pathos of a poem. This is the foreword from, I think this was his fourth book, called The Rhymes of a Red Cross Man, and this is just the foreword. I've tinkered with my bits of rhyme in weary, woeful waiting times, in doleful hours of battle din, ere yet they brought the wounded in, through vigils of the fateful night, in lousy barns by candlelight, in dugouts sagging and aflood, on stretchers stiff and bleared with blood, by ragged grove, by ruined road, by hearths accursed where love abode, by broken altars, blackened shrines, I've tinkered with my bits of rhyme. I've solaced me with scraps of song, the desolate ways along, through sickly fields all shrapnel sown, and meadows reaped by death alone, by blazing cross and splintered spire, by headless virgin in the mire, by gardens gashed amid their bloom, by gutted grave, by shattered tomb, beside the dying and the dead, where rocket green and rocket red, in trembling pools of poising light, with flowers of flame, festoon the night. Ah, me, by what dark ways of wrong I've cheered my heart with scraps of song. So here's a sheaf of my war-worn verse. Some is bad, and some is worse. And if at times I curse a bit, you needn't read that part of it. For through it all, like horror runs, the red resentment of the guns. And you yourself would mutter when you took the things that once were men and sped them through that zone of hate to where the dripping surgeons wait, and wonder too if in God's sight war ever, ever can be right. Yet may it not be crime and war, but effort misdirected are. And if there's good in war and crime, there may be in my bits of rhyme, my songs from out the slaughter mill. So take or leave them as you will. Okay. Where shall I start? I'll start with a funny one, I suppose. The Haggis of Private McPhee. Have you heard? This is written in the vernacular. So I'm going to try and read it like that. It's Hey, you heard what me old mother's pasted to me? Okay. Have you heard what my old mother's posted to me? It fair makes me homesick, said Private McPhee. Okay, so he's speaking Scots. Hey, you heard what me old mother's posted to me? It fair makes me homesick, said Private McPhee. And what did she send you? Said Private McFun, as he cocked his rifle and blazed at the Hun. A haggis! A haggis! Said Private McPhee. The brawest big haggis you ever did see. And think, it's the morn when fond memory turns to haggis and whiskey. The birthday of Burns. We maun find a dram when we'll call it the rest o' the lads, and we'll hae a Burns nicht with the best. Be ready at sundoon, snapped Sergeant McCall. I want two men for the listening patrol. Then Private McPhee looked at Private McFun. I'm thinking, my lad, we're confoundedly done. Then Private McFun looked at Private McPhee. I'm thinking, old chap, it's off wi' oor spree. But up spake their crony wee Woolly McNair. Just lay your braw haggis with me to prepare. And as for the dram, if I search the camp round, we maun have a drappy to just hood it down. There in, lads, and think, though the nicht it be black, or the haggis that's waiting for you when you get back. My, but it was waesome in nobody's land, and the dead they were rotten on every hand, and the rockets like corpse candles haunted the sky, and the winds o' destruction went shuddering by. There was scalping o' bullets, and skirling o' shells, and bringing o' bombs, and a thousand death knells, but currying down in a Jack Johnson hole, little fast fashed the twa men of the listening patrol. for sweeter than honey, and bricked as a gem, was the thought of a haggis that waited for them. Yet, alas, in our moments o sunniest cheer, calamities aft mayst cruelly near, often mayst cruelly near, and while the twae talked o' their puddin' divine, the Boches below them were howkin' a mine, and while the two cracked at the feast they would ha', the fuse it twas burnin' and burnin' away, then suddenly a roar like the thunder of doom, a hell leap o' flame, then the whisht of the tomb.
"How, Jock, are ye hearted?" said Private McFun. "Aye, Gordy, they've got me. I'm fearin' I'm done. It's my leg. I'm thinkin' it's off at the knee. Ye best gang and leave me," said Private McPhee. "Ha, ha, I'll leave ye, wanna," says Private McFun. "And leave ye, I canna, for though I micht run, it's no fair I would gang. There's no muckle to see. I'm blinded, and that's what's the matter with me." Then Private McPhee sadly shaked his head. If we bide here for long, we'll be biding for dead. And yet, Gordy lad, I could gang weel content if I tasted that haggis my old mother sent."
"That's droll," said McFun. "You've just speak it my mind. Oh, I ken it's a terrible thing to be blind. Yet it's no what that embitters my lot. It's missing that braw muckle haggis we've got." For a while they were silent. Then up once again spoke Private McPhee, while he whistled in pain. "And why should we miss it? Between you and me, we've legs for to run, we've eyes for to see. You lend me your shanks, and I'll lend you my sight, and we'll bathe hay a kite for haggis the night." Oh, the sky it was dour, and dreeping away, when Private McFun gruppet Private McPhee. Oh, the glower it was flying and crashing the ground, when Private McPhee guided Private McFun, "Keep clear o' the corpses, they may be no dead. Howd on, there's a big muckle crater ahead. Look oot, there's a sap, we'll be hay in a coop, a store shell, for God's sake, down, lad, on your dupe. Bear aft to your right. Aha, you're just doing fine. Before the night's finished, on haggis we'll dine." There was death and destruction on every hand. There was havoc and horror in nobody's land. And the shells bickered down with a crump and a glare, and the aimless wee bullets were dinging the air. Yet on they went staggering, Coorion Doon, when the shutter and clock of a Maxim crept round, and the legs o' McFun, they were sturdy and stoot, and McPhee on his back kept a bonny lookout. On, my brave lads, we're no far fra the goal. I hear the brass swearing to Sergeant McCall. But strength has its limit, and Private McFun, with a sob and a curse, fell his length on the ground. Then Private McPhee shouted down in his ear, "Just think of the haggis! I smell it from here! It's gushing with juice! It's embalming the air! It's steaming for us! Just aboot there! We're just aboot there!" Then Private McFun answers, "Damn it, old chap, for the sake of the haggis. I'll gang till I drop. And he gets on his feet with a heave and a strain, and onward he staggers in passion and pain. And the flare of the glare and the fury increase, till you think they've just taken a hell on a lease. And then they go reeling in pitiful plight, and someone is shouting away on their right, and someone is running. No, they can hear a sound like a prayer, and a sound like a cheer, and swift through the crash and the flash and the din, the lads of the Highland are bringing them in. They're both sorely wounded, but it's no droll. Oh, they rave about haggis, says Sergeant McCall. But is it no droll how they rave about haggis, said Sergeant McCall, when herplin' along comes wee Willie McClare. And they wonder why he was greeting so sair. He says, I just lifted it out of the pot, and there it lay steaming and savoury hot, when suddenly I ducked at the flash of a shell, and it dropped on the haggis, and it dinged it to hell. And oh, but the lads were fair taken aback, when sudden the order was passed to attack, and up from the trenches like lions they leapt, and on through the nicht like a torrent they swept, and on with their bayonets thirsting before, on to the foe with a rush and a roar, wild to the welkin their battle cry rang, and doon on the botches like tigers they sprang. There was nae a man but with death in his eye, for he thought of the haggis of Private McPhee. Oh dear. And so I think the Germans landed a shell on the haggis just as it was coming to perfect fruition, and the men of the Highland were so outraged that they swept out of their trench and assaulted the Germans. And I believe they won that little engagement. I have no idea if that's a true story or not.